Hey folks, we are doing a pre-recorded session with our on Q&A questions that have been queued up from our friends with Scott Hanselman. So Scott, why don't you quickly introduce yourself?
This is live, I'm here. I really am
well,
here.
Well, you are here, but we are pre-recording because our schedule is running a little late and you have a flight to catch, is that correct?
I feel live, I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, is this real life? Yes, it is. So
well, it is, this feels like that, doesn't it?
It does, it like, kind of does.
It happened, we really did it.
Yeah, so maybe for folks who are just tuning in, what did we do? What were the big things and that really sort of made your mouth drop? Because I've been watching Twitter and it's been pretty awesome seeing the reaction.
Well, okay, so first, if you're just tuning in, shame on you. second, so .NET is open source going forward. So the .NET Core 5, .NET 5 Core, ASP.NET 5 is open source. It's on GitHub. You can go up there and do this. We are going to do cross-platform .NET. So Mac and Linux is happening. So I just got off stage and I ran the same exact application on Windows. I was using Visual Studio 2015, ASP.NET 5, running on the Core CLR. The Core CLR is like the cloud optimized kind of like server density, you know, density one. It's like, it's not the full desktop. It's just the stuff you need to run on the server. And I did that on Windows. And then we switched over to a Mac, brought Miguel Diacaza up. We ran Sublime, we ran Emacs, we had autocomplete with OmniSharp at omnisharp.net, and then we ran the exact same application on the Mac. In that case, we used Mono. Going forward, now that Miguel has officially forked the code and is now doing pull requests, we're going to come together and make cross-platform opensource.net a reality.
This is awesome.
It's
this is insane.
Huge. Insane. It's the biggest thing since .NET.
Dogs and cats living together.
Mass hysteria.
Mass hysteria. That's right. So, you know, one of the things people have been asking for, and it's the question of, you said .NET Framework is open source, and you alluded to this as well, which is the cloud-optimized version and the .NET Framework full version. So for folks who maybe haven't been following ASP.NET VNext, what are kind of the goals and the differences between the cloud-optimized version?
Yeah, it's a little confusing, and you can take a look at my blog or at Soma's blog or Guthrie's blog, everyone's blog, we'll explain it. But the general idea is this. The .NET Framework that we made in 2003 kind of time frame was the desktop .NET Framework. And then that was also used on the server. So that means when you run .NET on the server, you've installed .NET, you've got WinForms and WPF and all this client-side stuff.
Right.
And even going farther, maybe you have XML, but your app doesn't use XML. Or you're not serving static files, you're only doing dynamic. Why do you want to buy into the full framework? Mm-hmm. So not only is the core framework smaller, but this is the key. It's composable and it's modular. So it's basically off by default. And if you want to add something, you bring it in with NuGet packages.
Right,
so
right.
You don't bring the framework, and the framework itself, like the core CLR, the CLR is a NuGet package. That's the, like, the... It's awesome.
And this is something that's almost, like, hard to just kind of click down onto this point. You as a developer, before, there was one framework, and all apps would use it.
Right.
Now I'm packaging the things I need,
yes.
And my app can run side by side.
So a way to look at it is, if you look at my talk at TechEd earlier, one of the demos that I did, and you can do this yourself with the preview, is you make an ASP.NET app, and then you right-click and you publish, and publish to a file system, a local file system.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on a USB key. Then take that USB key to a machine that doesn't have the core framework,
mm-hmm.
and you can run it.
And how does this magic actually happen besides saying, you know, David Fowler or who?
David Fowler and Damien and all the folks in the .NET team and all those people made it happen. It is a...
But what's actually, so on the USB for folks who didn't watch your tech ed demo, some USB file has a folder.
Right, so all the dependencies that you need, but the way to look at it is if
like
you...
Like what's it hosted in? Because everybody's like, are you packaging IIS or is it self-hosted or how that works?
That's a really great question. So when we make things modular, we want it to be completely modular. That means you can swap things in and out.
Mm-hmm.
I can run, ASP.NET, this is really important. ASP.NET 5 runs on the .NET Core CLR and the CLR. So
Okay. It's
the same ASP.NET 5. So you can write applications that run in both. But for example, if I had an app that was gonna do like feature A, it uses XML on the .NET, on the .NET framework, but it wants to use XML also on Core CLR, and I can bring it in as a separate piece. I basically say, don't bring the whole framework over, just bring this piece.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I package it up, all those dependencies, those NuGet packages, come with me, along with my CLR of choice. And that's CLR of choice. Right now, it's about a 16 meg NuGet package, but you can pick. The other thing you can do is go to the command line and switch CLRs at the command line.
This is the KLR kind of stuff?
Right, you can take KVM list, and you can see all the different installed versions, and you can switch. And what's significant about this for a person in the cloud is you have an app, it's working great, you don't want my app to mess it up.
Right.
The way it works today is we fight about whether you let me upgrade .NET on the machine, right?
Exactly.
You're like, I've got 4.5.1, I don't want to put 4.5.2 on, I don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If we have our own framework, we can do that. Now, you have a couple of choices. We can each have our own in our own folder, mm-hmm. or we can have them side by side in a machine level folder.
Mm-hmm.
But also from a cloud optimized perspective, we're trying to make this thing more memory compact for things like server density. So this will eventually be the one you want to be using in Azure.
Yeah, which is great. So we have some queued up questions that we do want to get to. And the first one was Sridhar, which asks, with ASP.NET vNext, it looks like we are going back to the flexibility that was present during the legacy ASP days. What made you to make this shift, and why we are doing it late?
Well, I was present during the legacy ASP. If you're talking about classic ASP, I don't remember that being very flexible. There were five objects.
Right, session, request, response,
cache, and application.
Yeah, ooh, look at you.
I taught that stuff.
Okay.
Here's the funny thing. I went back and looked over the last 22 years, and every 6 years something big happened. So it was like, I remember in like the early 90s going down to Intel and teaching some engineers down there classic ASP.
Mm-hmm.
6 years later, web forms had to, you know, so we went from MFC and C++ to request response, mm-hmm. teaching them about request response, then web forms, then MVC, and then now ASP.NET 5. But the thing that's great about this shift is that it's concept compatible. These are the same controllers that you know. This is the same SignalR that you know, the same web API and MVC. So maybe you're not going to necessarily bring it over and recompile. You're going to have to change stuff. But all the concepts are compatible. As far as doing it late, it's done. It's been going on for a long time. If you've been watching, it's actually been happening. People have been using vNext, now ASP.NET 5, for a while. So I can't say why it's late.
Okay.
I don't think it's late. I think it's just in time.
And how does customers like feedback actually play a part in this, right? Because there's been a bunch of folks who are looking at ASP.NET vNext, and when is kind of the right time for, you know, maybe the customer to do the evaluation of, I have an existing app, and how do I move forward? Because that's probably one of the questions that we're seeing a lot today, which is some of the compatibility questions, and when's the right time to start looking at it versus a kind of a moving target?
So absolutely right now you should be looking at this. What I recommend is that you kind of have a parallel branch of your project. So if you have some project, take a look at it, see what's completely missing and what doesn't exist in vNext today, and then let the team know those things in GitHub. This is all happening in the open now.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to see as many backroom kind of private discussion groups as much. GitHub issues, that's the place. If you find something and you have a reproduction, tell us about it. And you're going to be able to actually watch the commits and not wait 6 months for a patch to be released.
Mm-hmm.
And even more, if you found a bug, you could actually fix it, run your own private build, and then when the pull request gets accepted, bring it back in. Pull requests are going to be accepted much more readily now. So actually, we didn't even plan it, but we had a guy named Adam Ralph put in a test fix for the core framework within a few minutes of open sourcing it.
Did you actually see what his fix was? What was the actual, because I saw you talk about it.
It was a bad test that only worked on ENUS, and he tried it in, I think, Czechoslovakia, and it broke, so he fixed it, and he had the thing back in within a few minutes. And
that's
we already accepted it.
That's great.
So that's the kind of feedback loop that I want, but it's about being empowered. Oh, and you asked me about IIS, and I forgot, I skipped that.
Yes, yes.
Modularity. So you can pick what you want it to run under. We're going to release a thing called Kestrel. And Kestrel is a libuv. Libuv is the underlayman under the Node web server.
Mm-hmm.
Web server for Mac and Linux.
Okay.
And then you could front that with something like Nginx. But you can self-host, you can run in a service, you could run in a command line, you can run under IIS. It's totally up to you. It's about choice.
So speaking about that, are we doing anything specifically for, say, Apache or because you mentioned Nginx, like
so
in terms of your web server stuff, because everything right now is kind of like you're depending on Mono, right? So
right.
And where Mono runs, for example, on Apache.
Sure.
But how are things going to move forward or
that connection? Most people don't just take an application and stick it on the open internet kind of anymore. Like, for example, you wouldn't take node.exe, run it, and then open it to port 80.
Right.
You'd front it with something, whether it be Nginx or something else. We anticipate that Kestrel would be done in that same way. You wouldn't want to put that out. It's kind of like a mini IIS Express.
Right, right. Actually, that's a great analogy, just for people who are used to it. And will this stuff like come down with a framework, or is it like you install Visual Studio and now you have... These are obviously Mac tools too, right?
Okay, so that's a great question. So right now, we're using Brew, Homebrew, on a Mac. So you say brew tap ASP.NET/K, and then you're in, basically. And right now, we bring Mono down. But let me put it this way. We're figuring it out. It's going to be a couple of months before we figure this all out.
Okay.
But here's my vision.
apt-get?
Not apt-get. Maybe apt-get. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe NPM. Who knows? It's package managers all the way down.
Perfect. Thank you.
But my point is this. I'm imagining that I sit down with a bunch of teenagers, and we're doing a hackathon.
Okay.
And right now, they do that with Node and Rails, and they're on Macs. Maybe we come in, and we've got an 8 or 10 meg, 15 meg, I don't know, some number that's non-threatening. We sit down, and they're running Razor and ASP.NET and web pages. And they're doing it in their, isn't that sweet?
It's a beautiful future.
And they're doing it in their text editor of choice.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to have the dynamic experience, that refresh and go experience that you have with a Node and a Rails, but with the power and the speed of Roslyn and C# on .NET.
Love it. Absolutely love it. So there's a couple questions, and obviously we want to go to these. Alberto asks, how much is TypeScript included in the mobile-first, cloud-first development strategy?
Well, so TypeScript, of course, is a language that kind of transpiles into JavaScript. So it sits in the same category as something like CoffeeScript. It's CoffeeScript is what Ruby people wish JavaScript looked like. And TypeScript is what C# people wished JavaScript looked like. And because we've enabled now client-side build tools, and TypeScript comes with Visual Studio, you would put that as part of your client-side build.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got lots and lots of people using TypeScript, and it plugs right in as an optional compilation target for JavaScript.
I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, is targeting with Cordova. So with Cordova, you can actually use, if you're talking about the mobile first, if you really enjoy using TypeScript, you can actually use Cordova and your JavaScript framework of choice, including TypeScript, to build those applications. So if you have a set of reusable assets or framework that you're using on the web,
right,
you can reuse those assets and frameworks in a Cordova application for native applications.
What is that? Is it strongly typed? What is the name of that?
Strongly typed, that's right.
Right.
It's basically the compatible framework so that you have...
Right.
I'll let you explain
it. But this is all about choice, though. The point here is that if I've got a Cordova app, I can run it in Visual Studio, I can use TypeScript, bring the strongly typed type libraries over, maybe use Ionic framework if I wanted to, if it made me happy, use Angular and Ionic and Cordova. At every point, you should be able to pick the things that you want, and then we'll compete on a level playing field.
Yeah, which is great. So going back to our questions here, Haman asks, what is the future of ASP.NET Web Forms?
So Web Forms still works on the desktop CLR. The core CLR, it doesn't.
Okay.
But Web Forms has a whole bunch of new improvements that you can check out at the Web Dev blog. We've got improvements on async, improvements on data binding, and how we do model binding to Web Forms. So while I don't think Web Forms is going to see entirely amazing new features going forward, Web Forms continues to live on in that parallel thing. We've got the core framework and the regular framework. So you're going to see improvements in Web Forms. The other thing is that we've got, this is actually interesting, I just heard about this. It turns out we have identity flowing between them. So you could have a full CLR Web Forms app and a core CLR Web API app and move between them and basically move your identity back and forth. So you can pick. Like, if you have a great Web Forms app, keep using it. It's working fine. Move it to 4.6. Get it on the new stuff. Use the new features. Make the code behind clean. And then have another piece, perhaps be a Web API.
Okay. All right. Sounds reasonable to me. Ben Dyson asks, is there going to be other support for .NET code for IoT devices? Now, you did an IoT demo, Internet of Things. Maybe set this and then how that would work
so
for IoT devices.
So when you say like four IoT devices, that's a very open thing. Like
right.
Maybe my Fitbit is an IoT device. It depends on what your definition of an Internet of Things is. But anywhere that the micro framework runs, whether it be like a Netduino.
Netduino devices, for sure.
There's things like
Chris Walker has a number, like watches.
Yeah, he's got the watch thing that he's got the Kickstarter for. You've got, you know, Fezzes and things like that. So anywhere the micro framework works. But then there's also those larger boards, like those Galileo boards with running a small version of Windows. You know, I'd like to see .NET in there as well. So you can't run .NET in an Arduino, but you can run it on very, very similarly sized machines.
Okay, good answer.
And the .NET framework, by the way, the .NET micro framework has support now on 2013, and you don't have to use an older IDE. Like, it's back, and it's better than ever. Go and check out their CodePlex page.
Yeah, absolutely love that. There's a Colin Miller who's been there forever.
I love Colin Miller.
Yeah, he's great. Rajiv Thakur asks, with the new version of ASP.NET being launched, what is happening with ASP.NET MVC? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be merged?
So it's the same thing. That's a great question. So MVC and Web API now share the controller. We talked about how we were going to do this because MVC came out, and then there's Web API and SignalR. They've kind of all come together, and now when you say public class foo, it's a controller. Like, it's a controller, and you can derive from a base class if you want to and get those things available, but a Web API and an MVC controller are the same.
So, and let's talk about some things, because there's always the fun, shall we say, debate over what should be the defaults. So I say, let's just say, you know, ASP.NET, new application, I hit a controller, is it, by default, it would just be a class, meaning it won't do the inheritance by the default?
I would have to look at the starter class to see. And it's funny that you mentioned that thing about defaults, because this is early, and you can still talk about us. This is a preview release
right.
of 2015. We're still trying to decide. Even go back farther, if I say file new project, should it be a new .NET, you know, ASP.NET 5 app, or should it be a 4.6 app, you know?
Right.
How far do you want to ask people to change? Concept compatible doesn't necessarily mean completely compatible, right? So we're trying to decide what those defaults should be.
And you know, you mentioned as well some of the return types. So with Web API, I'm not going to have, say, an action result. Right, so when you talk about things like merging, where like normally I'd be returning a view, for example, when you talk about the merging for those, if I did file new, so, web API, and I think there's an interface now that is a return type, right?
Yeah, there's view results and action results, and there's tasks, and there's asynchronous controllers.
Right.
Just because MVC and web API are merged doesn't mean that you should not avoid the single responsibility principle.
Okay.
You shouldn't go nuts and have like super controller that does everything. So like, just because we've given you this great power doesn't mean you shouldn't think about it.
So I shouldn't be doing the adaptable controller, so that way in case I have a request that's you look at the classic example, which is, hey, I need to do my front end and I have all these devices that do stuff. Normally I would break them in and because there's this one block of code that kind of needs to write, and in some case I'm going to return JSON.
So
sometimes that view result.
If you've got a controller that does mostly views and you want to just make another function return JSON, you can totally do that.
Okay.
So that's a level of merging that we didn't have before.
Okay, so I don't have to change my code.
I think you'll be okay. you will survive.
Thank you. So and I think the other thing too is it'd be great to see, you know, as people kind of get past Hello World, what are the best practices as we get real-world customer adoption for, like, what works and what doesn't?
That is something that this is an interesting thing that the community is going to have to get their heads around, is that best practices won't always come from Microsoft. And that's important.
Sure.
It's an open web, and we are going to play in that open web. So people are saying, like, I see another question here, how does it work with Angular? It worked great with Angular. Like, do we have out of the box guidance on how to use Angular? No, Angular has that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to play along with everyone else. If Angular is the thing, or there's some new thing we haven't even thought about, like we weren't talking about Angular years ago,
right?
And who knows what we'll be talking about years from now? But we want to make a modular, composable framework so that you take just the pieces you want, pay just for the pieces you want, and whether it be Angular or Ember or whatever, or Breeze.js, use what makes you happy.
Yeah, you know, I think that is probably going back to that question of defaults, because we do a number of, say, a default, so whether it's Bootstrap, that's included in, and some of the decisions, like how do you actually, you know, do the thumb wrestling over, well, what JavaScript framework, you know, we have jQuery validation or Modernizer or some of these, how do you make the call from what goes in the product versus what doesn't?
Well, and the const of file new is an interesting one, because right now we have tooling for file new, but on Mac and also some Windows machines, there's this concept of yeoman, this generator.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't you be able to have your own file new? I've always dreamed about the ability in the ASP.NET dialog to set it up with the Dan Fernandez defaults and then go file new Dan Fernandez app with your tools and your libraries and your enterprise and the way you want. So that level of choice is a direction we'll want to go. We'll have some examples in Angular. We'll explain how to use Angular. It's clearly where people are going. We love Angular. But we can only take you so far. It's not going to be file new company.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of that, because that's actually one of the things that our team on the Azure side is debating is like, hey, does somebody want to make all these decisions up front? And, you know, maybe they do so that they have a SQL database, so that they have a Redis cache, so that they set up App Insights. Some of these choices you can make today. But there's some person who says, like, no, I kind of don't want to be in this wizard. Like, just get me to my project and really think more about the brownfield, and which is the majority of customers are doing new applications.
Yeah, we try to find a balance between empty site, starter site, and prescriptive, you know, company site.
Well, Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. And you're on, you want to plug your Twitter very quickly?
You can find me, I'm verified now, it's just crazy.
Fantastic.
Yeah, twitter.com/Schanselman.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, and appreciate your time. Hey, folks. We are back here at the Connect wrap-up. I'm Dan Fernandez.
I'm Brian Keller.
And Brian, really, here, we're just going to talk about some of the key things we want people to walk away with, answer a couple of your questions, and really talk about, wrap up, what was your favorite thing that happened today?
I'm actually going to tell you my favorite and my least favorite moment of the day. My favorite moment of the day was when we announced that .NET Server components were becoming open source and cross-platform. That's just huge news. My least favorite thing of the day was realizing that when people left during the intermission between the two keynotes, they went straight out into the hallway. They started downloading all of the preview bits, which is great. I love the excitement. But the problem was it actually brought down our internet connection backstage. And so all the demos that I'm waiting to do as part of the second keynote, they all started breaking, as you would expect them to do when the wire or when the network goes down. But we failed over to the backup network, and it was all OK. But those are the things that happen to us when we're running a live event here. So that was interesting. How about your favorite thing?
You know, my favorite thing, obviously, was the cross-platform story as well. Jay's demo of taking an application, ASP.NET vNext, showing some of the core and being able to deploy that in Azure to a Docker container, that is so money. Like, to be able to do that and to be able to show that capability, it's going to be awesome. And the next thing, because we apparently have to pick two, is Visual Studio 2013 Community Edition. So you worked on Express back in the day. I actually mocked Jay Sharp for you with Soma, but you know, just seeing the fact that we're really reaching out to developers, and it's a great way for us to take and make that capability available, because so many customers have been asking for an integrated experience, so I don't have to have two projects, because so many projects are both have some server capability or cloud capability and client capability, as well as a way to run extensions, which is just something that I think all of our partners in our ecosystem should be really happy with as well.
That's right. Yeah, that's really exciting. So what you're saying is you no longer have to install multiple Express SKUs on the same machine. You can just install the Visual Studio Community Edition, and that will give you all of that functionality in a single development environment, right?
That's right. So if you've been watching today, the big things that we want to do, obviously, is for you to try some of our bits. So there's four key downloads that are available right now, right? So that's Visual Studio Community 2013, Visual Studio 2013 Update 4, and this is if for customers, say, for example, I have Ultimate Edition, maybe I'm using an update, this is the new update that adds even more capabilities. The Microsoft Azure SDK 2.5, tons of new features there from HD Insight support, diagnostic support, and so
cloud
on.
Cloud deployment projects that I got to show off.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And maybe we should talk about what you actually showed off since you hinted at it.
Sure, yeah. Well, so cloud deployment projects basically give me a single location within my solution to house all of my infrastructure and configuration as code artifacts. So I can represent what's required in the cloud from my development topology requirements. You know, maybe I just need a single VM to go do some integration testing. I can use my MSDN subscription and those Azure credits every month that I get just to go spin up something in the cloud for dev test purposes. And then you can also model your production environment there as well. And you can even decide that you want to use that with a new release management service that we've made available as part of Visual Studio Online. So it really is a great solution from kind of going from dev over to operations in the way that a lot of organizations are embracing DevOps out there.
And lastly is Visual Studio 2015 preview. So one of the key things that customers say is, hey, this is a preview release. And so one of the capabilities we've added is the ability to have virtual machines that you can actually spin up using, say, your MSDN credentials. So you get $50 to $150 in MSDN credits, and you can use those towards, say, spinning up a virtual machine, trying Visual Studio 2015 preview, checking out, giving us feedback.
Yep, that's great.
So a couple of questions that we had here, which is, where can we download Visual Studio Community Edition? Calvin asks.
So visualstudio.com is the single place to go to download all of these bits. I'm not sure. Is the Azure SDK also on there? You might have to go somewhere else for the Azure SDK. But certainly for the Visual Studio tools, you can go there. You can create a Visual Studio Online account for free to start trying out any of the new things that we showed in Visual Studio Online today, such as the release management service, which is now available in preview. And someone else asked, was it Reno, asked, can you run different versions together on the same machine? Yes, you can. You can always put different versions of Visual Studio, like 2013 and 2015, on the same machine. You can put different editions, so all the Express editions side by side with Professional and Community and Ultimate if you want to. The one caveat there that we will mention is that you probably don't want to put Visual Studio 2015 on the same machine that you do your day-to-day production development, just because it is a preview. It's not considered a go-live release, and so it just creates a cleaner environment if you can take advantage of one of the virtual machines in Azure or spin up your own virtual machine or a dev test box you might have running, you know, kind of under your desk that you don't care so much about.
Great question. Now, Christy Bradley asks, will this be recorded for later viewing? And that's actually point three here, which is, one, everything that we've talked about today will be available on demand, and starting tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, going to 6 p.m., we're going to have a series of breakouts. That's the ASP.NET, .NET, Azure SDK, productivity tools. There's just so much there. Look at the agenda. And then we'll also have the ability to do live Q&A. So if you want to see all the demand on-demand content as well, day two, definitely stay tuned tomorrow.
Great. So Travis is asking a question, when will I use Bower and when will I use NuGet? I don't know anything about Bower other than it's a Super Mario Brothers thing, right?
Not exactly.
That's Bowser. Sorry.
Bowser.
What is Bower?
These are all package management tools. Bower is really used for client-side JavaScript, for example. And it tends to be client-side JavaScript because a tool called NPM, Node Package Manager, was used for Node. And that was to bring down things that are more like server or Node JavaScript on the server package management. Now, NuGet is for .NET packages. And we use NuGet maybe in ways that it wasn't necessarily intended to package client-side code. Like, imagine jQuery is available and Bootstrap and a bunch of these other frameworks that we make available via NuGet. There's no .NET code in there at all, right? So if you are a client-side developer, you're used to tools like NPM and Bower, and that's how you get your client-side packages. If you're a .NET developer, you're used to getting .NET packages, right? So this is, you know, whether it's a unit testing framework, whether it's a logging framework or so on, AutoFac, you pick your favorite. Those were NuGet packages because they included things like what version of the .NET framework you're targeting, is it a portable class library, and so on. You don't have any of those things. Really, JavaScript should go with JavaScript, .NET should go with .NET. So they could certainly be interchangeable. But that's the basic idea, which is if you're using client, use Bower. If you're using .NET code, use NuGet.
All right, sounds good. So last question of the day here comes from Travis. I think this is perhaps the most insightful question that we've received all day. He says, did we really land on a comment? I thought I saw a boom mic in the photos. I don't know how we even respond to that.
I think that's great, and we really appreciate one of the key things. I'm not answering that one because I don't want to go on record with an answer because I'm not sure.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question.
But really, this is all about your feedback, so we really appreciate everybody who took the time for the live Q&A. Watch the sessions on demand tomorrow, and join us tomorrow live from Microsoft Campus in Redmond, where you'll be able to see a lot more and get the deep dive content. And remember, the on-demand session videos are available right now, so there's 56 videos if you want to start watching.
Right, and we should just give a shout-out to our awesome crew here in New York City, who's been bringing us live all day in grand Channel 9 live fashion. They now get to have Channel 9 dolls thrown at them.
Yay.
So thanks for joining us, and
Yay.
We'll see you tomorrow here on Channel 9. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.